Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. I'm your host, Tim Z. Hernandez, and today our special guest is poet Irene Lara Silva, who is based in Austin, Texas. And I'm really excited to speak with her about her brand new collection of poetry, Cuicacali, House of Song. It's out with Saddle Road Press. So we're just going to jump right into that now. Irene Lara Silva, welcome to Words on a Wire. Irene Lara Silva is the author of two poetry collections, Furia and Blood Sugar Canto, which were both finalists for the International Latino Book Award in poetry. And she's also the author of the short story collection, Flesh to Bone. Cuicacali, House of Song is her newest collection of poetry out with Saddle Road Press. Irene Lara Silva, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you for inviting me to the show. It's great to talk to you again.
I know. Well, it's good to connect. You know, you're so far away, way out over yonder, the other side of Texas, Austin. How's it going out there?
Going pretty well.
Good, good. And we're here to talk about your fantastic new collection, Cuicacali, if I say that right. Am I saying that right? Cuicacali?
Yes.
Yeah, House of Song. It's a wonderful new book of poetry that you put together. As you know, I'm a big fan of your previous two poetry collections, Furia and Blood Sugar Canto, and I'm also a fan of the short story collection, a big fan of your book, Flesh to Bone. And you know, so congratulations, first of all.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And before we jump into my questions in the interview, why don't we just kick it off with the whole reason we're here, your poems. Would you mind sharing a poem?
Yeah, let me actually read the first poem in the collection.
Okay, please do, yeah.
So, because I get to cross over the river here in Austin every day, and such a beautiful river, and one day this poem woke up. You love a river. For 20 years, you love a river. And every time you cross it or sit to stare at it, you imagine your suddenly immense hands brushing over its calm ripples as if it was fur, as if it was skin, as if it could touch you back. As if it also loved you, as if it had waited for you always, this peaceful, uncontested river, always serene, so different from that other river, the river that has defined your entire life. The river you love is far, but not that far from that other river sometimes muddy, sometimes dry, sometimes green, sometimes lovely. But you can never think of it without seeing almost two centuries of bloodshed over it. Can never see it without thinking of the lives, the pain, the hurt, the losses crossing that river has cost. You have always loved rivers, but is it still a river if it has walls?
Beautiful. And if you're just tuning in right now to Words on a Wire, that is the wonderful voice of Austin-based poet Irene Lara Silva reading from her latest collection that has just dropped. It's called Cuicacali, House of Song. With Saddle Road Press. Irene, yeah, so this is a fantastic collection. And, you know, I should say, is this your, I believe this is your second time on our show, is that right?
Actually, I was just thinking about that earlier. I think this is my fourth time now.
Your fourth time? Oh, so we've had you on for every book. That's awesome.
I think, except for the first one, because it was there was one for Flesh to Bone with Ben and Daniel.
Uh-huh.
And then Blood Sugar Canto with you.
Yep.
And then when we came out with the anthology for Iman Iman.
That's right. That's right.
We interviewed for that also. And great. So thank you all for supporting my work all these years.
We're fans of yours. That's why we have you back. You know, the ones that we don't have fans have back. No, I'm just kidding.
They never come back.
They never come back. We hear of them and they never come back. No, I'm just kidding. But no, we're fans of your work, you know, and, you know, so then this is your fourth book. Is that right?
Yes.
I know that you also like edit other anthologies like Iman Iman and other ones like that. So and you're doing that kind of work. And also you're very active as an organizer and in the arts community there in Austin. So you're pretty busy. But how does it feel finally being this far along in the career and having your fourth book out?
It's amazing. You know, you spend so many years hoping and working and praying and suffering for that first book.
Mm-hmm.
And then something just starts to happen after that. And, you know, at the moment, now the Cuicacali is out, I'm working on the next four.
Wow.
And so just trying to keep all my files and documents, you know, in the right place. And,
that's great, the next four.
And just looking forward to, you know, these past, what has been 9 years since Furia came out, mm-hmm. they've been such incredible years just to even try to imagine or think of what's going to come in the next 9, 10, 20 years. Just it's amazing.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, the poet's journey or the artist's journey, would you mind sharing a little bit? I know this is kind of more of a personal question, but I find it really valuable, you know. Would you talk a little bit about maybe what the poet's life has brought to you, the kind of gifts it's you know, it's presented in your life, maybe that were unexpected?
Well, the first thing I always think of is something that poet Felice Guzman Mendoza told me 11, 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We were having a conversation, just checking in with each other. But she said this beautiful thing about how she was so grateful for the presence of poetry in her life. And, you know, mostly, you know, writers and poets love to complain about pain and work and rejection and isolation and everything else. But she just said, you know, she was so grateful to be a poet, to have that outlet, that it was a don, not one that came from her, mm-hmm. but one that had been given to her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing I always think. You know, what an amazing thing it is to have this in your life. You know, what would life be without the poetry, without the creating, without the writing?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what came then and afterward with readings and with books, you know, it's amazing to have readers. It's amazing to have, you know, audience. It's amazing now to visit classes, to know that there are students studying my work, to talk to people who, you know, who want to interview me, who are writing papers about my work. Like, all of that is, you can barely encompassing your life, especially for me. Mm-hmm. I'm at work. I'm at my regular 8 to 5 Monday to Friday job.
Right.
And so it's sometimes a little crazy to skip from one mind to the other, from the, you know, the regular routine to suddenly being, you know, I'm going to be a poet now for the next, or, you know, I'm a poet always, but I get to express it and to live it for, you know, half an hour or longer.
No, that's right. You know, and it's interesting, as you mentioned, that, you know, how I think that early on in our careers, when we make an intentional decision to go down the path of the arts, or in this case, poetry, you know, how much we hold on to some of those first conversations by the ones who've come before us, you know. I think of Francisco Alarcón, you know, rest in peace. I think of when I came out with my first book ever, and this was like 2004, I did a reading in Sacramento, and you know, he did his Calling of the Four Directions, and he did the Sage and all of that. But what really blew me away was the way that he sort of really called to, and this was, he opened this up for my reading, for this reading I was doing there, and the way that he called to community and really focused on this idea of bringing in the community, and may the community sort of nurture this young poet, and may the community be what the young poet is about. Like, he kind of just did this calling, and I mean, that is truly sort of what has stuck with me all these years, and what, you know, what I continue to kind of return to as a kind of a mantra or a reminder at times. I mean, there are many, many, we have many mentors, but that was one of the first conversations. And, you know, it's, those things really stick with us and resonate for years down the road, right?
Yeah. For me, I mean, when I first came to Austin, one of the first people I sought out was Raul Arsalinas, you know, because he was here.
Right.
And well, you know, it's, and it was his birthday on Saturday, the 17th was his birthday.
Right.
And he's been gone now for about 11 years.
Right.
But I remember from the very first time that I walked into this, into bookstore, how welcoming he was and how at every single reading, every single one, he welcomed everyone. And he was very, very clear and specific and articulate and emotional and he was just so welcoming to everyone and made a space for everyone.
Yes.
So, I mean, sometimes when I think of, you know, organizing events or doing readings, part of it, I think, came from that because he had a space and he used it. He offered it.
Yes.
And so many poets, so many writers developed and, you know, became, you know, for me, I think that was a huge part for me to have that space to develop. So why wouldn't I also want to create these spaces where other poets and writers can share their work and, you know, can develop as speakers, as readers, and meet their community?
That's right. That's right. And he did that, certainly. And that's what I know now, from what I know of you and the years that I've known you, that's the work that you've been, you know, immersed in and have given to the communities. And I think of a mutual friend of ours and another wonderful poet whose work I admire, Joe Jimenez, author of Rattlesnake, Allegory and the Possibilities of Mud. And about your book, he writes, Irene Lara Silva writes of songs that call us. When Silva tells us a heart is infinite, it isn't a metaphor she gives her readers, but a tenet, a suspiro, a truth about life and tierra and sangre that must be spoken because there are those of us who carry that craving in our hair, our nails, and our breath. That is a wonderful depiction, and I really feel like that encapsulates all that is in this book. How would you, though, describe this book for our listeners?
It was a collision, is what this book was. Partially, you know, thoughts that I've had for a long time. You know, indigeneity, culture, language, race, land, all of these things, you know, have been in my life always. Maybe articulated differently once I went to college. But definitely, you know, as life has gone on and as a poet. So all of these ideas about that kind of collided, without going into too long of a story, with kind of an experience of rebirth last year and of possibility and of, you know, recreation. and wanting to find a way. And I think I remember writing a poem about this, like in, I don't know, 2000. It wasn't even 2000. It was 1995 in D.C. when I wrote a poem about how love and rage sort of overlap, right, and how they feed each other, and mm-hmm. how they collide and how they complement and all of these different things.
Yeah.
And, you know, and with this book, for me, it was a very joyous experience to write it. Wow. But my brother actually laughed at me because he was like, what are you talking about? So many of these poems talk about rage.
Right.
And I was like,
right,
well, yes, but, you know, it's rage that's born out of love.
Right.
It's rage because there is injustice, because I love others. I love myself. I love my family. I love my work. I love all of these things. And there are threats. There are, you know, conditions of suffering that is inflicted by governments, by others.
Right.
And so why wouldn't there be rage?
Right, right. And tell me then about the title, how that came about and what the title means for you in terms of, you know, the title Kuikakali, House of Song, you know, how did that come about?
Several different ways. One, I think, I don't remember now what it was that I was researching, because this book included a lot of research and included a lot of getting into Nahuatl terms and, mm-hmm. and phrases. I want to say that I found this by accident. Mm. And I found the word first without knowing what it meant. And then when I saw what it meant, I thought, oh my God, this is perfect, because, you know, that's what I think of poetry as. Poetry is song.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just the language, it's the musicality, the sound, the rhythms of it.
Right.
And I think, you know, for other poets might follow the thought, or they might follow the image. But for mm-hmm. me, it's always been about following the sound.
Right.
And when I think of what it be to be a house of song, mm-hmm. To, you know, within ourselves to be a house of song,
yeah,
as a community to be a house of song, for poetry to be a house of song. And then the other part that really made me feel like this was a fitting term for this book was that the house of song, or the Kuikakali, was, if hopefully I'm saying this correctly, but it was the school mm-hmm. where they would send young men, young boys, to become warriors
mm-hmm.
in the Nahuatl Aztec culture.
Right.
And I thought, you know, that's amazing, because that's not something that we, or rather the mainstream society, would put together, to think of a house of song
yeah.
as a place where people would become warriors.
Right.
But for me, I think as part of this, these ideas that I've had about healing,
mm-hmm.
I'm now at this place, and I kind of talk about it in the essay that's at the end of the book,
right,
but I'm really concerned with what do we do at the point beyond the healing, beyond the immediate wound? How do we become strong enough to not be wounded? How do we nurture our strength? How do we become our strength? So then we can fight from there. We can speak from there. We can love from there. We can be from a place of strength.
And that really is a wonderful description of what the poems in this book do for the reader. The poems in this book feel like a map toward that end that you just described, this healing and beyond the healing. Every poem in here, every word feels, is really described or defined, I mean, in that way. So, you know, I think that it's very successful in that way. And in fact, I think you should share another poem with the listeners, if you don't mind.
Let's read this one. This is the very first one that actually, so I wrote a few poems scattered here and there, but this is the poem that really started the rush of writing that became the whole book. And this actually was inspired by two events. And I was trying to figure out what my rage was about, mm-hmm. and that led to this poem.
What page is on?
Yeah, 40.
40, okay.
After the third time, the would-be burglar climbed into my second-floor patio and tried the doors. It is night. It is dark here. I am in the shadows where I cannot be seen from the ground, long-bladed machete in hand. I am waiting for those hands, those fingers to grasp at the railing as he hoists his weight up and over, then quick, quick, I will collect my dew of blood and scream. I am waiting, and as I wait, it comes to me that I am weary of tears, that we are all weary of tears, that my ancestors and my descendants are weeping, and I can hear them weeping, and I can taste their tears. And this is what we have done, and what we have done, and what we have done, until we are sick with grieving. What has been taken, what is being taken, and what will be taken. I am weary of tears. I want blood. I want an infinite machete extending all directions in time. No one will touch my children or my ancestors with violence. Their blood will never be spilled, will never have been spilt, will not be spilling. no dying now or then or to come, no violence, no injury, no hurt, no woman, no child, no man, no person forced against their will, no patch of earth or water or sky violated or polluted, never violated in the time to come or the time that has passed. My infinite machete swung by my infinite strength, I will make a thousand-layered necklace of severed hands to rest on my infinite chest. Let the fingers and limbs pile up in my wake. I am weary of tears. I am weary of grieving. They will not touch what is not theirs. They will not touch what is not theirs. The earth is screaming and singing through me. Through me unleashed, I will collect my dew of blood and scream. They will not touch what is not theirs. They will not touch what is not theirs. I will take their hands, their fingers, their hearts for wanting, for having wanted what is not theirs. Not theirs. Not theirs. Not theirs. Not theirs. These bodies, these histories, these dreams, these families, these lands, these skies, these nations, these people, these freedoms, they are not theirs to take.
And if you're just tuning in, that is the voice of Austin-based poet Irene Lara Silva reading from her brand new collection of poetry, Cuicacalli, House of Song, and that's out with Saddle Road Press. You know, Irene, as I'm listening to your poem, I'm also reminded of not only song, but also how history plays a vital role throughout all of these poems. In fact, I could probably safely say throughout all of your work. But in this collection specifically, why is that so important for you to touch on the historical aspects?
First, because it's where we come from. Second, because it's not only where we come from. It's also what we live in. We live in the consequences of history. We live in what is the making of what will be history. We tend to think also that time is, especially at the past, is unchangeable and immutable, that it's not open to interpretation, that we don't realize how much history we don't know. It was fascinating to me, even in just reading about the Treaty of Guadalupe, which I've read about for, 25 years at least. Yeah. Of course, in college, I never heard about it in school, or not in any depth. But it was fascinating to me that I found an article that was talking about how many people in what was then, the main U.S., how many of them were against the idea of manifest destiny. And in grade school, in high school, we're taught, especially here in Texas, and perhaps also in most of the West or most of the U.S., that manifest destiny was an inevitability, that there was no other possibility, that there was no other choice. Right. And we're never taught that people rejected it, the people protested against it, they organized against it, they spoke against it. And to think, how that affects who we are now, what conditions we live under now, but also what that means to, what it means when it comes to protest now. You know, especially with all the people who dismiss protest as being useless or ineffective.
And, that's been evident in all of your work, like I said, not just this collection of poetry, but throughout. But you even take it a step beyond the page, which I think is probably a vital aspect to point out. And that's that, you're an engaged poet in the world. You're a community organizer and, you're actually moving your ideas, as opposed to simply putting them down on paper and letting the book sort of do the work for you, And why is that aspect, that kind of, I guess you would call praxis, why is that, important to you as well, to be an extension of the work that way, in the community, an agent for change versus just a poet who puts words down?
I don't think I could be a poet without that. I was telling a class recently, I first started reading work not in cafes or in classrooms. I started reading work during protests and during marches when I was a college student. And I guess part of that is always for me the impulse of writing, is to speak to that, to think about what power and social justice and fairness and all of these things are. We always think we could do more or we could do differently. But, along the way from where I chose to write and to do poetry. And I do think, there's a vital connection between activism and art and culture. There's sort of these three leg points that, the balance, they feed, these three points feed each other. That's how you keep rage from collapsing in on itself. That's how you keep the love alive, because you know what it is you're keeping alive. You know what you're fighting for.
That's right.
And so I think at any of these points, any ways that we can work in there, if we can feed that cycle, that sharing, that, it goes in all directions between art and culture and activism. And so, I figure this is where the stands that I can take could contribute to that. And, you know, it would probably not be what somebody else would choose.
Right.
But it, in my life, has been where I felt that I have been most able to contribute to that.
Right. And, you know, I'm going to shift gears here a little bit. I want to ask you about the cover art for your book. I know for the listeners out there that can't see the book, you know, the book itself is a beautiful and sort of a burgundy cover with yellow lettering. But then there's just this really rich and intense painting that's on the front cover. Would you talk a little bit about that?
The burgundy has actually become black because the printers were having trouble with a... It wasn't supposed to be burgundy. It was supposed to be a red. And
oh, wow.
So because they couldn't get the color right, now we've gone with black. So the
wow.
color is now black, but the painting is the same.
So you're telling me I have a collector's piece here?
Yes, you have one. Nice. I think there's only 25 of that color.
Awesome. Okay, that's and it's signed. Perfect. All right, good. Thank you for telling me that. Good.
But the artwork is it's a painting titled Blood Song that my brother Moises Lara painted.
Oh.
And he painted the artwork for Furia, for Flesh to Bone, and for Blood Sugar Ganto.
Yes.
So this is the fourth of my my books that I've had his art for. And I've loved this painting. In fact, I've looked at this painting the entire time that I was writing this book because it's right over my desk.
Yeah.
But what I love about it, although it's odd because he painted it maybe 10 years ago, but it took me a while to find my way with this painting.
Wow.
And part of what I love about his work and the reason that I felt that it's been so... It's a good compliment to my work,
that
it has this energy. It almost like it doesn't know how to stay still.
That's right.
And
that's right.
I think there's also something that kind of, you know, invites the reader, but also warns away readers. It invites and warns readers at the same time, hopefully and possibly about what's inside.
Yeah, it's a great description of it. And I know that, you know, you've been collaborating with your brother on these covers for all of your books, I believe. And you know, that's kind of what I look forward to be honest with you. Sometimes when your book is going to come out, I know you have a book that, you know, you're starting to announce it. I start to look forward to what the cover will be. I want to see the art. You know, I want to see the art. I'm a fan of your brother's work. And, you know, even going back to some of your other books as well, that was what stood out to me most was just these beautiful paintings. Now, I want to, we have about 5 minutes left approximately. And so what I'd like to do is focus a little bit more on the title poem, which is about a 14-page poem. It's a long poem in the back, Cuicacalli, which the book is named after. It's the title poem. I don't want to say too much about it yet. I'd like to hear from you what that poem took to create that poem, because it's such a laborious poem and it's such a, I'm already saying too much. See, I'm going to let you talk a little bit about it. Well, tell me a little bit about that poem.
So the title poem, the last poem, yes, it's a very long poem, and the intent was for it to cover time, a little bit the you know time before, but also time from the point of Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo to now, so roughly 175 years, a little bit more, because there's also a little bit of the prehistory to that, or kind of setting the scene of that.
Right.
But I thought, you know, there's something that I want to say here about. You know, what it is to be indígena, to be indigenous, what it is to be Texan, what it is to belong to this land, what it is for that not to become a way that I separate myself from others. You know, for all of those who try to separate, you know, people that are indigenous or people that are, you know, Latinx or that are, you know, Mexican-American or whatever people might call themselves. But usually people try to separate, you know, those are from that side of the river. These are from this side of the river. These are... You know, why would we care about people from South or Central America? Why would we, you know, unite ourselves with indigenous people across the Americas? All these different ways that we separate ourselves is instead, and I wanted instead to think of all the ways that we unite ourselves, all the ways that we have retained that community to today.
Right.
And how we would speak of that. And how we speak of that, not just with rage for all the injustices, but with love for community and with the possibilities of language.
Yeah. Right. And in fact, it's so all-encompassing and so ambitious, but well done, that it made me think a lot, too, even of the idea of history in verse, you know, which other poets have done in the past. I think of Eleni Siciliano's, who wrote the California poem. And then it's a wonderful, the whole book is just one sort of long historical look at California through poetry. Or Ed Sanders, who writes various, and he's still writing probably new editions and versions of it, but he writes American history in verse, and he kind of, you know, encompasses and intertextualizes, you know, the poems and history and kind of, and you've done this, but except yours is a specific attention to the indigenous, you know, history of this land and this territory and to the people who have inhabited this since the beginning of time.
And especially because it's been so erased.
Yes, it's right. Exactly.
And for us, it's been erased. You know, for those of us who not only look indigenous, but we also grew up in that cultural setting. You know, we have it within us. We know it. We lived in it. We've just not had perhaps a name for it. We've not acknowledged it in each other, or we don't have, you know, the governmental papers to be able to say this is what we are.
Right.
But, you know, one of my inspirations was for this poem specifically was Barbara Jane Dias's collection, Dewata.
Oh, yeah. That's a fantastic collection.
Which is amazing. But, you know, when you think of it, she covered basically the span of time from creation story to contemporary time in the Philippine Islands, and what that means to community and to story and to song, and how we envision who we are by looking at how we were created and how we have survived.
I'd like to then maybe go out on with you reading an excerpt from this long poem, Kuikakali. Would you mind?
No, perfectly fine. I'm going to actually, I think I'll read the first section, Kuikakali. One, body of song. Never say we did not speak. Our tongue is an infinite tongue, strong in its ignorance of your American time, its roots reaching deep into the earth where sunlight and the memory of sunlight live in the darkness. There are songs breathing in our words. There are songs breathing in the sunlight. There are songs breathing in the earth. Our hands are breathing with songs. We are inhabitants of a border inhabited by a border. We say Tejanos. We say Mexicanos. We say Mexicans from this side, Mexicans from that side. We say Mexican Americans. We say Chicanos, Chicanos, Chicanexes. We say Tex-Mex. We say indigenous. Some of us know the names, Kickapoo, Apache, Comanche. Some of us know, many do not, but we know, we know. We say here, we say there, we say there is no line. We say, we mean us, the people. We mean we, who belong to this land, to all our lands. We mean we, our hands working the soil. We mean we, our feet dancing on this earth. We, keeping it turning. We mean we, our blood spilled here. We mean we, equal parts earth and sun.
And that is the voice of the incomparable poet Irene Lara Silva, based out of Austin, Texas. And she is reading from her newest collection, Kuikakali, House of Song. It's out with Saddle Road Press. And I encourage you to go out and pick up this book and remind yourselves why you are human here on Earth. Irene, it's really such a pleasure to talk with you, you know, and finally we get to connect here and there. But, you know, but it really is a pleasure to talk with you. So thank you for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be able to talk about this book. It's so new, and I just, yes, I love sharing it.
Yeah, well, good. And congratulations again, and I hope this book goes on to find a wide readership. So thank you.
Mil gracias.
And that wraps it up for this edition of Words on a Wire. We'd like to thank our special guest, Irene Lara Silva. Be sure to pick up her book, Kuikakali, House of Song. And also want to thank our wonderful maestro back there behind the board, Stefania, our producer. Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for continuing to tune in. We'll catch you next week, same time, same place, right here on KTEP 88.5 FM.